You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff. My name is Gretchen Miller. I'm a little bit under the weather today, so I apologize for the sound of my voice, but I will do the best that I can. Today we're going to start off with a recipe from theblindkitchen.com for festive cheese ball. I know the holiday times are over, but I always love a good cheese ball. This make-ahead cheese ball appetizer is a welcome addition to serve at any party. The strategy is to have bright green and red spots of color against a snowy white background, so the colors are the star of the show, besides the taste, of course. This yields 16 half-ounce servings. You'll need 1 8-ounce package of room-temperature cream cheese, 1 cup of shredded sharp white cheddar cheese, 1/4 cup of finely diced red bell pepper, 1/4 cup of finely diced green bell pepper, 1 tablespoon of finely diced green part of a scallion, 1 teaspoon of onion powder, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1 teaspoon of ground white pepper, 1/2 teaspoon of seasoning, salt, blend of your choice, and 1/2 teaspoon of liquid smoke. For step one, you're going to put the cream cheese into a medium bowl to allow it to soften as it comes to room temperature. For recipe tip, to bring the cream cheese to room temperature a little more quickly, cut it into smaller pieces so more surface area is exposed to the air and it will soften faster. Step two, prepare the produce. You're going to finely dice 1/4 cup of red bell pepper and set aside. Finely dice 1 cup of green bell pepper and add to the red pepper, bell pepper, and set aside. And then finely dice 1 tablespoon of the green parts of the scallions and set those aside. You can use the slicing guide to make sure that the bell pepper is consistent width. Once you have cut the bell pepper into strips, you can use kitchen scissors to easily cut them into similarly sized pieces, and do the same with the scallions. For the TBK tool, that's the blind kitchen tool, there's a slicing guide, a cut glove, and dry measure cups, all available at theblindkitchen.com. For step number three, you're going to shred 1 cup of white cheddar cheese and set aside. Recipe tip. Because the sharp white cheddar cheese will not be melted in this recipe, using pre-shredded cheese is fine. If you do shred the cheese, use the cut glove to protect your hand while shredding. Step number four, on slow speed, beat 8 ounces of the softened cream cheese with a hand mixer until smooth and creamy. Step five, you're going to season the cream cheese by adding 1 teaspoon of onion powder, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1 teaspoon of ground white pepper, and 1/2 teaspoon seasoning salt blend of your choice. Add 1/2 teaspoon of liquid smoke. The TBK tool here, wet measure spoons. You're going to blend all ingredients and adjust the seasonings to taste. Step number six, mix in 1 cup of shredded white cheddar cheese. Step number seven, gently fold in the produce. That's the red and green bell pepper pieces and the green parts of the scallion, taking care to distribute them throughout the cream cheese mixture without bruising the produce. Step number eight, use a sheet of plastic wrap or one of our elasticized and reusable dish and bowl covers to shape the cheese mixture into a round ball. TBK tool, the hanging bag and covers. For step nine, refrigerate for at least 1 hour so that all the flavors rehydrate and meld together. Serve in an attractive dish surrounded by crackers or baguette slices and enjoy. Next up for you, we're going to go to smittenkitchen.com for miso black sesame caramel corn. Now, does that sound amazing or what? This began pretty harmlessly. My husband told me recently that whatever magic they roll buffalo wings in, basically a lot of butter and Frank's hot sauce, was unquestionably one of his favorite flavors on earth. I put the jar of Nutella in the cabinet on notice. A few days later, I spotted an ode to buffalo wings in the format of caramel popcorn and sent him the link, joking that I'd probably regret it. I shouldn't have joked. It quickly became clear that to know that this popcorn existed and to not make it was an act of cruelty. Why so mean, Deb? Is writing a cookbook and running a website, occasionally cooking dinner and mashing up sweet potatoes for the little sweet potato son, really a higher kitchen calling than buffalo wing popcorn? So I made it, but it looked rather sad and lonely in the bowl by itself. So then I made some blue cheese dressing on the side with celery to dip in it, and lo, it was wonderful, and the story should end here. But you don't need to tell me how to make buffalo wing popcorn. Bon Appetit can do that for me. Instead, I'll tell you what happened next, which was that the miso that I'd picked up for a different recipe started calling to me, and I remembered all of the miso caramel sauces that cropped up on menus and recipe pages a couple of years ago, and I had to find out what it would do to caramel corn. Makes sense. Amazing things, it turns out. Miso is deeply fermented, salty, and a little earthy, with a depth of flavor that plays off the buttery sweet faintness or bitterness of a caramel in a satisfying, balanced way. With the addition of nutty black sesame seeds, I couldn't stop eating it and found my allegiances torn. Shouldn't all stories conclude with a winner? In this frenetic electoral season, don't we deserve clear conclusions? Well, no, it turns out. It turns out that the answer to which one should make is both, because that's why I have 8 cups of happiness. Why have that if you could have 16? You'll thank yourself on Sunday when these disappear in a breakneck cacophony of crunch. Here's the recipe. Miso, black, sesame, caramel corn. Each of those words. I love it. This is inspired in no logical way by Bon Appetit. You'll need nonstick vegetable oil spray, 2 tablespoons of a neutral cooking oil, 1/2 cup of plain popcorn kernels, 3/4 cup of granulated sugar, 1/4 cup of water, 3 tablespoons of unsalted butter in chunks, 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt, 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda, 2 tablespoons of white or red miso, 1 tablespoon of black sesame seeds. You're going to heat your oven to 300 degrees Fahrenheit and line a rimmed baking sheet with parchment paper and set aside. Lightly coat parchment and the very largest bowl that you own with nonstick spray. Place 2 tablespoons of oil and 2 to 3 kernels in a 3-quart or larger pot. Turn the heat to medium high and cover with a lid. When you hear those first kernels pop, add the remaining kernels and replace the lid. Using pot holders, shimmy the pot around to keep the kernels moving as they pop, and when several seconds pass between pops, remove from the heat. Transfer to a coated bowl, and you should have about 8 cups of popcorn. Wipe out your pot that you used to pop the corn and add sugar and water to it, and bring to a boil over medium-high heat, only stirring until the sugar has dissolved. Boil, swirling the pan around. You want to wear pot holders for this, until the caramel is a deep amber color, which took about 8 to 9 minutes in my already heated from the popcorn pot. Remove from the heat and stir in the butter. The mixture will hiss and bubble furiously. Then you're going to return it to the stove, reduce the heat to medium-low, and cook for another 2 to 3 minutes, removing from the stove if it appears smoky sooner. Remove from the heat and whisk. A whisk will be best to break it up in the salt, the baking soda, and the miso. Quickly pour it over the prepared popcorn and toss to coat. You'll be glad you used a gigantic bowl. I used 2 silicone spatulas to mix it up because it's a messy project and popcorn will want to fall out. Whatever you do, do not pick up any caramel-coated popcorn that falls out unless you like burned fingertips. Wait until it cools. Coat the popcorn as best as you can, but don't fret if there are gaps. Spread popcorn on a prepared baking sheet and sprinkle sesame seeds all over. Bake in the oven, tossing occasionally, which will also help coat any scantily clad popped kernels, until the mixture is dry, about 15 to 20 minutes. Let cool completely on baking sheet and then bring it up into a large bowl. As far as doing this ahead, it keeps at its very best for about 4 hours. For For longer, it can be stored in containers or bags at room temperature. If the day is humid, it might just get a tiny bit sticky, but nobody will care. All right, we are going back to the Blind Kitchen for this next recipe. Speaking of caramel, has inspired me to have a recipe for caramelized apple pie. This caramel-based apple pie starts on the stovetop and is deliciously spiced. It's a spin-off from the humble apple pie that Christine Ha made on MasterChef. And there's a link at theblindkitchen.com to the video showing Gordon Ramsay critiquing the pie. He made her cry, but he highly praised the pie. This is going to yield 1 9-inch pie. As far as a recipe tip, keep the pie dough chilled as much as possible for a flakier result. For the ingredients, you'll need 2 9-inch pie crusts. They can be store-bought, or you can use the Blind Kitchen recipe for basic pie dough, the flakiest. Our crust is much like Christine Ha's version, but is the recipe that I learned in culinary school. You also need 5 to 6 cups of Granny Smith apples, peeled, cored, and thinly sliced. This will be 6 to 8 apples, depending on the size. You'll need 1/2 cup or 4 ounces of unsalted butter, 1/2 cup of flour, 2 tablespoons of apple juice, 2 tablespoons of apple brandy. Note, if you do not want to add alcohol, you can substitute 2 additional tablespoons of apple juice for the apple brandy. You also need 2 tablespoons of half and half or heavy cream, 1 tablespoon of vanilla extract, 1/2 cup of brown sugar, 1/2 cup of white sugar, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of nutmeg, 1/8 teaspoon of ground cloves, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 2 tablespoons of cornstarch and 1 egg. So for the instructions, first you're going to prepare your work area. A recipe tip here is to prepare the spice blend and measure out the wet ingredients first, and then the stovetop sauce comes together quickly. Step 1, in a small dish, you're going to combine the following spices: 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of nutmeg, 1/8 teaspoon of ground cloves, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. You're going to set the spice mixture aside. As far as a recipe tip here, freshly ground spices are much stronger than ground versions that lose their potency over time. The mini box grater tool and the cut glove tool are the perfect tools to grind fresh cinnamon, nutmeg, and cloves. Step number 2, you're going to combine the following wet ingredients. Recipe tip, it is fine to pre-measure and combine these wet ingredients as they will be added to the pan at the same time. For a recipe tip, the wet measure cups and the wet measure spoons are the perfect tools to allow people with vision loss to measure wet ingredients quickly, accurately, and without waste. Those are available on theblindkitchen.com. You'll need 2 tablespoons of apple juice, 2 tablespoons of apple brandy. Again, if you don't want to use alcohol, you can just substitute 2 additional tablespoons of the apple juice, 2 tablespoons of half and half or heavy cream, and 1 tablespoon of vanilla extract. Those are all the wet ingredients, or the following wet ingredients, that you're going to combine together and set that wet mixture aside. Step number 3, prepare the apples. Recipe tip, once the apples are peeled, it is important to keep them underwater as the exposure of the fruit to air will cause them to start to break down and take on an unpleasant color and taste. So you're going to peel and cut the apples into similar bite-sized pieces and put it in a bowl, cover with water, and set aside. As far as a recipe tip, the food corer tool from the Blind Kitchen cuts each apple into 12 wedges, which are the perfect size for an apple pie. I use the food corer to cut the apples into sections before I peel them. This way I can examine each section as I peel it and have the opportunity to peel away any of the rough core portions that might have come off with the section. And then I cut each wedge in half for perfect bite-sized pieces. So recipe tip, the palm peeler and cut glove tools make this step easy and safe. Step number four, you're going to make a roux. In a pan that is large enough to hold the apple pieces, you're going to melt 4 tablespoons of unsalted butter. The recipe tip, the butter slicer is a handy tool that allows you to pre-cut your butter into similar size pats that you can store in your refrigerator to just reach in and grab as many as you need for any recipe. For this recipe, you're going to need 12 pats. Recipe tip, melt the butter under the lowest heat possible as you just want to hear it slightly sizzle. The dairy sugars in the butter can easily burn and you want the butter to just sizzle slightly. So when the butter is melted, allow it to sizzle for about 60 seconds more while moving the melted butter around the pan. Step number 5, combine the flour and the butter. Add 1/2 cup of flour to the pan and use a whisk to combine the flour and the butter. Cook over low heat for about 2 minutes, whisking constantly. The mixture should resemble wet sand. Step number 6, you're going to add in the wet ingredients. Add in the liquid mixture, apple juice, apple brandy, vanilla extract, and 1/2 and 1/2, and raise the heat slightly and whisk constantly until the mixture comes to a boil. Reduce the heat to a low simmer. We're going to add the spice blend next, step 7. Add in the spice blend of cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves, and salt and whisk until combined. And then add the cornstarch. Add the 2 tablespoons of cornstarch and whisk for another minute or two. As far as a recipe tip, the cornstarch will help to thicken the caramel liquid and also to absorb the juices of the apples that are released as they cook. Step number 9, you're going to add sugars. You add your 1/2 cup of brown sugar and 1/2 cup of white sugar and stir to combine. Step number 10, you're going to add the apples. Drain the apples and add them to the pan. Save the bowl to hold the cooling apples and then cook until the apples just start to soften. Recipe tip, you're going to take care not to overcook the apples at this point. They should still have a light crunch in the center. They will continue to cook in the oven, so you don't want to reduce them to an applesauce consistency. Step 11, you're going to set your apple mixture to cool. Place the apple mixture into a bowl to stop the cooking process and allow it to cool while you prepare the pie crust. Step number 12, preheat the oven to 425 degrees. You can check the oven rack level before you turn on the oven. The racks are much easier to adjust when the oven is cold, of course. For this recipe, the pie should be cooked in the center of the oven. You're going to put the bottom crust in the pie pan. Place 1 pie crust in the bottom of a 9-inch pie pan. If you are using the bake under the pie server, place it under the bottom crust first. I like stainless steel pie pans because they conduct heat evenly. Glass and ceramic pie pans can make made of a variety of materials, and they can be less predictable. Also, the standard stainless steel pans are the perfect size and shape to use the bake under the pie server. When you're preparing the pie dough, I use the large dough and pastry work tray. It's generously sized, and raised edges make it an ideal place to roll out your dough without getting flour all over the counter, and it makes cleanup much easier. I also use the adjustable rolling pin and the pie dough bag to ensure that the dough is the thickness I desire and the perfect shape. And again, all of these products mentioned are available on theblindkitchen.com. Step number 14, add the cooled apple mixture into the crust. I like to place the apples in a mound in the center of the pan for an attractive presentation and even distribution as the apples cook. So step number 15, you're going to place the second prepared pie crust on top of the pie. So if you are using the pie crust stencil to make the steam holes, use it before you place the top crust onto the pie. Use the pie dough bag to transfer the crust to the top of the pie. Next, you're going to crimp the edges to seal the top and bottom crust together. As far as the recipe tip, you can use the crust crimper tool to seal the edges easily and attractively. Step 17, you want to apply egg wash and sugar. Lightly whisk the egg and use a pastry brush to put an egg wash on the top crust and the crust edges. Sprinkle the pie with a light dusting of granulated sugar. Step 18, cut slits in the top of the pie. Cut 6 evenly spaced narrow slits in the top of the crust. You can skip this step if you use the pie crust stencil in step 15. You can use the pie marker and divider to cut evenly spaced steam slits into the top crust of the pie. And next, you want to protect the edges of the pie crust with foil or a pie crust protector. The pie crust protector is found in the Blind Kitchen store, is adjustable, and it works nicely for a 9-inch pie. We're up to step 20 now, folks. You want to bake the pie by placing the pie on a rack in the center of the oven, and you're going to cook for 15 minutes. Do not open the oven, but reduce the heat to 350 degrees and cook for another 20 minutes. You're going to use the heat gloves to pull out the oven rack out halfway so that you do not need to put in your forearms into the oven, only your fingertips to pull the rack out and push it back in. It's very easy to break off pieces of the crust edges when putting the pie in and out of the oven with the thickness of many oven gloves or mitts. I place the pie on a baking sheet with raised edges so that my gloved hands will come in contact only with the baking sheet and the crust remains safely out of reach. The raised sides of the baking sheet help to keep the pie on the sheet as the pie is moved, because a pie can easily slide off of a flat baking sheet. Step 21, you're going to remove the pie crust protector and cook the pie for another 10 to 15 minutes until done to the desired doneness. And step 22, allow the pie to cool for at least 10 minutes and then cut and serve as desired. You can see our recipe for whipped chantilly cream or use vanilla ice cream as toppings. You can follow this link to the perfect dollop to learn how to put a perfect dollop of whipped cream or a scoop of ice cream on each piece of the pie without touching the pie slice or the cream. Enjoy! For our next recipe, roasted tomatoes with white beans. I'm going to go right to the recipe, and if we have time for a little bit more, we will. So this is roasted tomatoes with white beans and basil from smittenkitchen.com. It serves 2 to 4. Takes 30 minutes, and the source is Smitten Kitchen. You'll need 5 tablespoons of olive oil divided, 1 pound of very ripe cherry tomatoes halved, 6 small garlic cloves, but who's counting? Peeled. Kosher salt and freshly ground pepper or red pepper flakes to taste, 1 15-ounce can of cannellini or other white bean drained and rinsed, 1/4 cup of thinly sliced fresh basil leaves, loosely packed. You're going to heat your oven to 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Pour 2 tablespoons of the olive oil in the bottom of a 13 by 9 inch baking dish. Arrange the tomatoes in the dish, cut side up. Nestle the garlic cloves around the dish and drizzle with another 2 tablespoons of the olive oil and sprinkle with 1 teaspoon of kosher salt and many grinds of black pepper. Roast the tomatoes for 20 minutes until everything is bubbly and juicy, and remove from the oven or to a trivet or a cooling rack, and use a fork to lightly mash the tomatoes and garlic. Be careful if they spray, which will not be fully soft yet. You're going to add the drained beans and more salt and pepper if needed and stir to combine. Return to the oven for 5 minutes, drizzle with the remaining 1 tablespoon of olive oil and scatter with basil, and eat right away, either as it is, or ladled over crostini. Note, you may have noticed that almost all of my favorite ways to eat beans come from places where I've swapped them in for pasta, not out of any grievance with pasta, gluten, or carbs, but because most of my favorite pasta sauces translate so well to other ingredients. My jumping off point here is the baked cherry tomato sauce and this fusilli pasta adapted from Nancy Harmon Jenkins, though I skip the crumbs and cheese too. We're going to go back and learn a little bit more about this recipe. In July, this most lethargic cooking month that I think is when I came up with this. And I don't mean this in a bad way. I know in our productivity fixated culture, we're so busy, so crazy. We balk at praising apathy, but what if we leaned into it instead? It's hot in July. The days are long. If midsummer demands some laziness, some loosened grip on the to-do list, if departicipation beckons and we can pull it off, I'd like to try it. I could even schedule it one day next week if I move some things around. Fortunately, there's almost no reason to make any Herculean cooking efforts, not when gardens and farm stands are overflowing with things good enough to eat without intervention, like heavy, sweet cherry tomatoes. If I'm going to turn on the oven, however, it will be for this. This uses a pound of tomatoes, and it's one of my favorite summer meals of all time. These aren't slow-roasted cherry tomatoes, the kind that semi-dehydrate and turn almost into tomato candy. They are quick-roasted with olive oil and garlic until bubbly and otherworldly. The salty juices concentrate in the oven into a glorious rough sauce for the beans to roll around in and drink up. I finish it with a handful of basil. And while you can and probably will eat directly from the baking dish, it makes the most amazing crostini ladled over warm pieces of toasted bread. You can tinker with the flavors here almost endlessly. Add briny things like anchovies, capers, or cured black olives. Add prepared pesto instead of fresh basil. Finish with Parmesan, pecorino, or even burrata. But I promise that if you only make it with tomatoes, garlic, beans, and basil, you will not feel that you are missing a thing. Thank you for joining us for Food and Stuff. My name is Gretchen Miller.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.